Welcome to Hers,
His, and Ours,
part of the Scheist Podcast Network.
Season 1, Episode 5, Date Night. Nora goes out with David Morton, her carpenter, but things don't turn out as she thought. Kitty goes on a double date with Jonathan, Warren, and Amber. Kevin has dinner with Scotty, and sparks fly.
We're back for episode 5.
Hello, here we are.
Yeah, I mean...
No, 6. No, 5, just kidding.
Yep, 5. 6 will be the next one. But... At the end of the first 3-episode bundle, I said that I'm going to do a better job of like taking structural notes. I think I did.
You did. I think we did good.
So hopefully that everybody that listened to that, like when I said I was going to improve, I did. I still messed up Tommy.
That's
but
okay.
He's Tommy. I got him now. Tommy.
And you know Scotty now too.
Scotty. Who the fuck is Scotty?
or not. It's Dan Kirkman. Kevin's love interest.
Oh, yes. Okay, so there was a Scotty.
There is a Scotty. Okay. He's just not a brother.
All right, so it didn't just come out of nowhere, at least. So yeah, you were talking about in the last episode, you sort of hinted at Jonathan and his grand romantic gesture. And that's this episode.
Yes, thank you.
So
that was a sneak peek.
It was. But we see that they're on the phone. I think she's talking about the Santa Anas scaring her. And then she goes into the kitchen and Jonathan's trying to have like the worst phone sex
ever.
And
she's pretending like she's into it.
And she's like, oh, I'm so naked right now. And then he's like, no, you're not. Because I'm watching you from the shadows and scares the shit out of her.
That was great, though. I mean, the Santa Anas are scary when they're really bad.
I think it was more of like, we need to identify this as like a Los Angeles thing.
Yeah.
So we're going to describe the Santa Anas. But yes, they are scary. They contribute to wildfires and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's legit. But, you know, he scares the shit out of her. Nora comes running down. In a t-shirt with like no pants on and a baseball bat. And you get the moment of Sally Field, like, don't look at me. I'm covering up right now. But then she asked Jonathan to move in.
Well, Kitty says he's staying in town indefinitely because they're going to work on things and he's going to go check into his hotel room. And in a very passive aggressive manner that she's so good at, she's like, no, don't do that. Why bother? We have plenty of space here. And Kitty is just like, no. She knew Nora was up to no good. And Nora's like, no, I insist. You should just stay here with us. And then he wants to, you know, make a dinner for everyone and invites the whole family.
Well, before we get there, we go from that to, I think it's like the next morning, we have the handyman. Who's repairing the pantry that
Treat Williams
Kitty destroyed? Yeah, Treat Williams. And so as soon as I see his face, I'm like, okay, so he's going to be the new love interest for Nora here. And I mean, look, I understand. Like, at least they're going to like play that angle out, and it does. But we sort of see that happen. It's it's predictable from like a TV show kind of setup. It's like, what is he doing in this show? I know his face too well for him to be a handyman, right? So yeah. He's going to have a bigger... It's like when I see somebody in a movie where I'm like, what is this actor doing in this movie? Oh, they're definitely the villain because there's no other reason for them to be cast in this movie. It happens. But we also see that Kitty is now back at work and there is a new cutesy blonde young intern named Amber.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, Kitty, you're totally my hero and everything, you know, except for your politics. And I was like, got her.
Zing.
I was like, it's funny that, like, you know, this ambitious young sort of perky bubbly blonde comes in and hits Kitty with that, and then is kind of basically like flirting with Warren and Kitty gives him this look of like, oh my God, you're sleeping with her already. And Warren just kind of gives her like a little eyebrow raise, like,
and lets her believe so.
He lets her believe it at that point. Yes. And, you know, I understand why, because he's still into Kitty, but he doesn't know what the future holds, but they're sort of coming from a little bit of a immature place of like, I'm going to leverage like the cute new girl in the workplace against the girl that I actually have a crush on to make her jealous. And it's a TV drama. I mean, this stuff still happens in real life too, but I mean, it's like they're too old for that shit. But the family is also now trying to game plan their financial issues, right? And I think Jonathan is consulting with them.
Yeah, so they speak to a lawyer first about what's their best strategy to try and save.
Oh, it was the lawyer, yes, excuse me.
Save the company.
And to stay out of legal trouble.
And stay out of legal trouble. And they pretty much came to the conclusion they needed to come up with $12 million, I think.
$15 million.
Yeah. And that would have to include pretty much selling certain things off or out of the company. So Jonathan does end up helping them later.
It's a little later in this episode.
Yeah. Without knowing the legal ramifications or what's actually going on in the inside, just as a hedge fund dude, he's helping them from a business standpoint, but the lawyer kind of talks through to help make sure they're pretty much doing things cleanly.
We'll circle back to that. But yeah. So the family, like, they're trying to game plan that. So they're all like, okay, who tells who what, right? You handle the workers that we're going to have to sell stuff. Sarah, you got to tell mom. And so that's the game plan. But we cut back to the workplace. Kitty is not happy that Warren and the intern are flirting because she likes him. And while she's trying to pretend that Jonathan is the guy, she is very noticeably bothered by Warren flirting with her. And so she says something about like the lefty liberals are going to run in crying sexual harassment in this situation. So she's like way overreacting. She's projecting big time. And she's like fear mongering, but it's also coming from this place of jealousy disguised as self-righteous indignation. Like, none of this is about the appropriateness of their relationship or any of that in the workplace. It's purely about she's jealous and she's pretending like she's not. So again, I'm like, Kitty, minus points. And I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be like minus pointsing her, because it's like, it's not like I don't understand, right? But again, like, she's too old to be behaving like this. She's in her mid-30s at least, and she's acting like a teenager in high school with this kind of behavior. So I don't like her sort of like pulling the righteousness card in that situation, especially when she's like, Warren and I slept together. I said it was a mistake and I'm trying to get back with my old guy. And now he's moved on and he's flirting with somebody else. And she's like, well, I cannot let this stand.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, Kitty, not doing so hot right now. But I do understand it, but she's losing footing in the family totem pole. So,
well, and I think there's an important conversation that happens later on in the episode that clarifies, or you kind of get a glimpse into why that is the case for her with her and Nora. But it's still one of those things where you're like, yeah, come on, you should know better. Like, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth, essentially.
Yeah, and I think like part of it, because the style of the show is almost like plucky comedy, is that scene where she's sort of chastising Warren about that, is that almost like something out of Friends? Right, back in the 90s, right? So it feels a little bit like a 90s style jaunty comedy at times, and it's moments like that that I feel like are trying to do that. But for me watching it now, I'm like, yeah, I get that it's like supposed to be kind of cute and funny, but like, it's just not, in my opinion. Like, it just doesn't paint her in a great light. But they go to, we find out that Jonathan is making dinner for the whole family. And
Nora is last to find out.
Yeah, she's last to find out. So she's kind of surprised. But, you know, so that's on Kitty for not telling her. But Jonathan plans like a pretty big and complicated meal. But for some reason, Nora really uses this as the opportunity to like go after him and to attack him for being a hedge fund manager. And for, I mean, she obviously doesn't think highly of him, and she doesn't think that Kitty chooses good men, but
she also doesn't think she actually loves him.
She also doesn't think that she actually loves him. So that is fair. That's like the one thing that probably matters. She's like, I'm your mom. I can tell that you don't love him. Right. Yeah. So that matters. But in terms of all the other stuff, it's like, if she loved him, would she forgive all these other things that she's like attacking him for? Because she's like, oh, you're a capitalist. You just make the rich richer. And Nora's sitting there saying that like she's not filthy rich. Like, she didn't just throw a wedding size petty party to embarrass somebody. Like, she wasn't at a country club event for her husband. Like, there's not an event in the next episode where it's $25,000 a table that they can just blow, right? Like, so her talking down to him about sort of wealth is like pot calling the kettle black a little bit. Like, she's not dialed into reality. And I think maybe that was because she was maybe in the background, like, while William was alive. And it was very easy to be the rich wife and have the nice house and have all these things and not understand, like, where that's coming from, like not being involved in the business, or why your husband was hiding multiple things from you. Why? I'm not going to say that like her husband was right for having an affair, because I think that's fucked up. But again, when I was asking at the end of the last episode, like, what did Nora do to everybody? Because there's obviously some reason that William cheated. Doesn't necessarily make it justified, but there is a reason. So now I'm starting to think more like, okay, she's just maybe, I see where maybe Kitty gets the self-righteousness, and we start to learn that they're maybe more alike than we thought, or that they think as well. And so they're getting into it, but it's like, also like, this guy, you invited this guy to live in your home. Then he decides to make dinner for you and your entire family.
And then you shit on him.
You attack him. And it's like, whoa, like, what the fuck? Like, I get that, like, maybe you're trying to paint this guy as like, he's a capitalist. Capitalism's bad. He makes rich people rich, et cetera, et cetera. Like, yeah, maybe all those things are true. But this is not a conversation to like do in this instance, I think. Like, there's no tact involved in that. Because if she's really upset that she got invited to dinner last and that she got ambushed by it, she could have just been like, I'm going to go read a book in my room and I'm not going to be here at dinner because I feel like you did this to me intentionally. But instead, she decides to stay and get more involved in like the petty aspect of things. So like we talked about, petty supreme. But
she's so good at it.
She is. And in the middle of all that, we have the emergency moment that sucks the energy out of the room again with Paige again, where she needs to get her insulin and Sarah hasn't done it and everybody's freaking out.
Well, because Paige starts crying because it hurts and Joe is doing it. Yeah. And Justin, being an a military vet who was also a medic, jumps up, runs over to her, gets her attention, does it really quickly, and kind of like saves the moment, which I really loved and of course made me cry, because that's, again, like, he's like, yeah, I've dealt with worse under fire. And it's like, he's the one that has to keep being like, hey guys, I'm a veteran, you know?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point in the show, because it's really telling us that, like, despite all of Justin's issues with addiction and PTSD and like all the problems that he's facing, he's still a good person.
Absolutely.
100%. But then there's like maybe like lesser serious problems amongst the other siblings, and they don't always act like a good person under pressure. So I think it says a lot about Justin's character, despite the drug use. And I think that is the point there.
Absolutely.
Because you have the whole family in that moment also being like, who the hell was that guy? Who was this superhero?
Yeah, especially because I think Justin showed up late or was like the last one to show up. And Tommy immediately like jumped on him and like, you know,
we're still not talking. Shut up.
We're still not talking. Like, don't look at me. Just being a complete ass.
Yep.
And then he has this hero moment, you know, and it's scary. You know, Paige is little and, you know, Uncle Justin kind of to the rescue and made her laugh and got her to stop crying, picked her up, got the insulin in her, got, you know, her back to her seat and everything. And then they were able to kind of move on. And then I won't jump ahead too much, but then there's another really amazing moment for Justin at the towards the end of the episode too, where it's like Kevin and Justin. That's why I said from the beginning, Kevin and Justin are my favorites.
Well, I think what I'm seeing now is I'm beginning to have a better understanding of why Dave Annabelle has top billing in the credits order.
Oh yeah,
because it like his character arc has the growth potential to go from you being this person to like the family kind of looks down on you, you're doing drugs, and it's like if he gets his act together, I think it's pretty evident that he would be the one that they all look up to. So because it's like you see that flash of it there, like, oh my god, like this guy's an amazing guy, and he could be that all the time if he wasn't struggling with all these other issues. So
and he still doesn't really have like family support, which is the other shitty thing, like yeah, okay, cool. Tommy got him a job, but they're still not addressing the fact that he's got PTSD and the drug or substance abuse is coming from something, and that he fought in probably one of the most horrific wars of his lifetime, especially after 9/11. And, you know, veterans in general, anyone in combat are going to go through a lot of trauma, and no one's addressing that. And it really frustrates me, I think, more so now rewatching it, because I think, I mean, we're almost 20 years down the road, right? Who knows if that show was on now, what they would do. But at the time, it wasn't that late. It was 5 years after 9/11 happened.
Yeah. But I mean, the Iraq War was sort of a little bit closer to this time than
9/11
and the whole like invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq and all that. So that was a little bit after 2001. So I feel like timeline wise, it's okay. But I should also say that I don't think that is a fault of the writing. Because the conversations about PTSD openly affecting soldiers, like on a sort of national scale, didn't really happen until that, you know, like shell shock was like definitely a term. This stuff existed. It was known about, but it wasn't talked about in the public sphere in a way. Like, I don't even remember the term PTSD growing up, but then by the time that we were out of high school, we knew about what it was because there was conversations being had about it. And so I think the show isn't, I think the reason that the characters are not acknowledging it is because it wasn't maybe necessarily in the public conversation yet. So they don't know how to address it at this point in the script writing.
True.
So it's possible that like the language for it didn't even come about until maybe later on. Right.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Because probably within the mental health community and within the veteran community, like they all knew that this was an issue, but having a name for it that like the greater public recognized that could like actually like shell shock is like, you know, it's kind of a buzzword, but like post-traumatic stress disorder, like actually is like, oh, this is a, like a, it's in the, what is the book? The D9.
The DSM.
The DSM. Thank you. I was close. I got one of the letters. Okay, but we'll move on because Kitty is beginning to just continue to lose more points here. She's scoring only in the negative. And if this was golf, it'd be great. But so she's cock blocking Warren so much that her plan is to make her current semi-fiance, who she's trying to patch things up with, have dinner with Warren and Amber. So she wants the dude she's trying to rekindle things with to have a four-way dinner with the dude that she slept with
Talk about her and Nora being more and more alike than ever. Like, that's some Nora level stuff right there.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, I'm starting to see the connections there. And, like, they don't get along because they're too similar.
Yeah, for sure.
And so they're both very stubborn in that way. But I'm just like, oh, my God.
maybe you're going to say this, but and she takes them. She picks the restaurant her and Warren went to.
Yeah. And so, like, whether or not I agree with, like, Jonathan's politics, which almost never come up in the show, like, he's not just like, hey, I'm super this or super that. It's like, I'm a hedge fund guy. I work with money, right? A major family dinner. Like, he's not great. We know that Kitty doesn't love him, but I don't think that's, like, his fault at this point. He's not the one that cheated, right? So it's not like he's not big in Sex and the City, right? You know how Big, like, treats Carrie like shit and she just in love with him anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's not the case here. It's like, he's pretty good to her and he seems to love her and want a relationship with her. And maybe his just baseline of, like, what a good guy is kind of superficial, but he's not, like, offensive, right?
Yeah.
She takes him, she makes him go to the restaurant where her and Warren went to. The waiter recognizes them and is like, oh, let me get you your drinks that you had last time. So it's like, you know, I'm sure Jonathan is having to imagine all of this in his head. And I'm just like, God, this is so fucked up. So I'm just like, I don't know. I'm with Jonathan here at this point. So they leave us for a moment because Tommy and Sarah are still, they're not butting heads, but, like, they're still sort of in the shit together at work. And Tommy, like, tells Sarah, like, yeah, you gotta make a decision because your paralysis here around this is just, we're gonna be screwed. You have to do something. And she's drowning. She's in over her head. And so Tommy is right in that situation. I think Sarah knows it. But we are back to Nora and I don't know why I said she's laying it on thick before the awkward dinners. Gotcha. Okay. So that's what it was. Mm. She's having her awkward dinner date night with Dave.
Oh, yeah. And they show up to the restaurant.
They show up to the restaurant and then Saul and Holly are there.
Yes.
But different restaurants. Not this. They're not. That would be even weirder if they're right. All at the exact same restaurant. But I mean, that probably would have worked for what the show was going for. But Nora seemed to be laying it on thick with Kitty about, like, why she doesn't love him, the kind of man that she thinks Jonathan is. And Kitty says something to the effect of, like, oh, you mean like you with Dad?
Ooh, that's right.
Yeah, so, like, Kitty is a little bit aware of, like, maybe her taste in men is shaped by her mom's taste in men and the fact that, like, oh, yeah, this is kind of how you viewed Dad, right? Or at least her perception of it.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, especially if they're pretty much the same, right? Nora stayed with William while he was having an affair for most of their marriage. And so Kitty's going to gravitate towards men like her father as well.
Yeah, but Jonathan is not the one cheating on her, we established. But we do see that, Nora goes to dinner with Dave, and they're at the same restaurant as Holly and Saul, and they kind of, like, acknowledge each other, and that's super awkward. But I'm like, what's more awkward? Going out on that dinner date as Nora with your handyman and your brother seeing you with him, or her seeing her brother with husband's mistress, is that a more awkward dinner? Or is the other dinner with Kitty and Warren and Jonathan and Amber more awkward?
Ooh, that's a tough question. My gut says to go with the Kitty, Warren, Jonathan, Amber dinner is more awkward.
They're all at the same table.
Yeah, they're at the same. Well, and because Kitty planned it for the four of them to go together, where this is just a very unhappy coincidence for them.
Yeah.
And they're not sitting together. They're not hearing each other's conversations. Still awkward, I think, more so for Nora than anyone else. But yeah, I think the Kitty dinner is way worse because it was intentional.
Yeah.
And this was not.
That's fair.
What do you think, though?
Yeah, I would agree, because they're all at the same table and it's very, it's awkward for like some of them, but I think like for all four of the people, like in Holly and Saul and Nora and Dave's position, like they're all feeling the awkwardness of it, because it's just like, it's like the elephant in the room. Like they know they're there. The way that Nora and Saul like pass each other on the way to Nora and from the drunk. Bathroom. Yeah, and she's drunk. And they're just like, you just let me live my life. Fine, you let me live mine. And like just pretend we're not here. That was great. It was a fun moment for them. But I think at that moment I realized that this episode being titled Date Night is the only one so far that has been like very singular in its purpose. Because it is a date night for all these people. And like, that's all. I don't see what other.
Like double meaning.
Yeah. I don't know. But I was like, oh, maybe the streak is broken. But, you know, you had mentioned Justin showing more of his like good side as well in this episode. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I love this moment. Had me in tears, of course. But at the end, he shows up at Sarah and Joe's house. And he acknowledges that he realizes, like, you know, Sarah hasn't given the insulin to Paige yet. So he's like, I'm here to help you learn how to do it or to get more comfortable with it, because it's about repetition. So he has a bunch of needles and saline solution. And he's like, you're going to continue to give me saline solution injections until you feel comfortable with it. And so the episode kind of ends with that scene kind of like fading out of Sarah continuing to kind of stab him with the saline solution. And it's hurting Justin, but he's like, it's okay. Keep going until you're comfortable, until it doesn't hurt, because he was invested in making sure she was comfortable, so that in turn also Paige was comfortable and not, you know, feeling as much pain with this.
Yeah, it is sweet. Like, you really get to see sort of like who he is, like his character, right? He's like, yeah, I just happen to have saline solution and some needles, so like go ahead and inject me as many times as the bottle will allow for you to get comfortable with this, so that like, you know, you can be the hero for your daughter in the next moment. Because it's like, you don't always want like Justin to the rescue, but the show doesn't quite end on that moment, because we still get I think the last scene is Kitty and Nora.
Oh, right.
Coming together. But, you know, I said Jonathan might be like an ass, which I don't even know if he is. But I said he's right in calling Kitty out on all of her bullshit.
Oh, yeah, because they go back to the house
and he's like very.
What the F was that for?
Yeah, like. Shit, I didn't fucking deserve that. Like, even if I'm not like the guy that you're choosing to be with, which it's clear that like you're not really invested in that. And he's basically like, I care for you. And if you ever like come to the conclusion that like this is something that you want, then like maybe let's talk at this point. But like, you got to figure your own stuff out. Yeah. And so I'm just like, OK, he walks away from that. And still after that, Jonathan is helping the family business. Like, which, again, like, we're talking about character in this show. Like, what is his incentive at that point? Kitty has cheated on him, embarrassed him. Nora has attacked him. But yet he's at Ojai talking to Tommy and Sarah and Saul about how they can liquidate certain assets to get their asses out of trouble. And I'm like, I don't know. I was like, is Jonathan really a bad guy? I was like, I think I'm team Jonathan here, because all we've seen is him get the short end of the stick. And that's why I was like, the writing seems to have like put Jonathan in a position where his existence is framed as sort of a negative, but it's really just to get us to a point where Nora and Kitty can begin to heal their wound.
Yeah. And because we also see the conversation finally kind of come to light with Kitty and Nora about how she's like, you know, you never pick the right guy, or I don't think you ever like who you're actually picking. And I don't think you know, this is what you really want. You're picking for other reasons, essentially. And so it kind of makes Kitty think a little bit more. And then, you know, after having this conversation, I think she comes to terms with like, yeah, this isn't right. She's not in it for the right reasons. She's trying to make something work because she thinks they look good together on paper. but that's not really what relationships are about. And she obviously doesn't have a healthy relationship role model, as we know, based on what we know about Nora and William's relationship now at this point. So it makes sense. And then they have that kind of powwow. Jonathan puts her in her place, and then she ends up, you know, going back to Nora. That's the last scene then.
Yeah, she's in bed with her mom, and there's kind of like...
The winds are still going and blowing up, and she's, you know,
I'm
like...
I'm scared. Do you want to sleep in mom's bed? Okay.
Yeah, like Jonathan, she's like, yeah, it's kind of over, essentially, and the wind rattles a bunch, and she was like, do you want to stay here? And she's like, can I? And I think that's a sweet moment for them, kind of like a full circle moment. But yeah, I think the relationship layers are just so complicated. This is not the one and done of like, we've tied everything up in a little pretty bow.
Yeah. Well, I'm also curious. It's like, because at this point in the show, like Jonathan could just be done. And then maybe based on what I'm guessing is like, he may make an appearance at some episode in another season to like, we need to insert drama somewhere. And maybe Kitty has like changed and she is regretting that or something. But at this point, you could just be done with Jonathan. He's serviced the plot in terms of getting Kitty and Nora to begin to reconcile. And so, like, he doesn't need to exist anymore. But I'm like, damn, yeah. He kind of seemed like a stand-up guy, aside from the fact that Nora didn't like him making rich people money. But she's, like, not even aware that he's helping her family, yeah, like, stay out of financial peril at that point, too. So,
because she still doesn't know anything about what's going on in the business, because Sarah doesn't end up telling her in this episode what's correct going on when, yeah, she was supposed to.
Yeah. So we'll get that. We'll get to that in the next one, but
stay tuned.
Yeah. Team Jonathan. I didn't think that at the beginning.
I know.
But I'll be curious. I'll see if I'm right that he's going to show up later. Maybe not this season, but, like, maybe season 3 or 4 that, like, he's for some reason in town and they bump into each other at an event and she's now with maybe someone who's not even Warren and she's pulled. I don't know. If they want drama, it's there, I think.
I can't say.
Don't confirm or deny.
I cannot confirm or deny.
All right, cool. Well, we'll see you again for episode 6.
All righty. Thanks for listening to Hers, His, and Ours. We'd love for you to continue on this journey with us. The easiest way to do that is to like and subscribe to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Follow our socials at Hers, His, Ours, spelled like time, on Instagram and X. To keep tabs on this show and others in the Scheist Podcast Network, follow at Scheist Pod Net on Instagram, Blue Sky, and X.